Jeez. We've really had a run on those old Superman cartoons since Ewan Morton Hoof did that Krypton cast thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think you mean the Crypto cast, by the way, Mike. Well, that Hoof's a good guy.
Yeah, whatever.
What's up your butt?
I just don't think you should be spending so much time with the Morton Hoof is all. You realize he eats people and forces slubs like us to fight in the Thunderdome, right?
Yeah. I hear he eats people.
Yeah, that's what I said, Ryan.
That's just rumors, man. Gossip, okay? The Hoof I know wouldn't do that.
He's just using you for our cartoon collection. You realize that, right? If it wasn't for the store's defense grid, he would have just taken it from us a long time ago.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Here, go return these damn Superman tapes to the shelf. And while you're gone, maybe try to remember who your real friends are around here. You know, the ones who won't eat your face if you piss them off.
Fine!
Grateful jerks. Thought I was the boss around here anyway. Wasn't for Hoof, we wouldn't even have Taco Bell or fresh vegetables.
What's wrong, my child?
What the? Jackie? Is that you?
Yes, Dave. What's wrong? You sound upset. Come, kneel by my air vent and tell me your sins.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
Been to confession since I was a kid.
Please ignore the dust bunnies clinging to my air vent and tell me what troubles you.
It's Mike and Ryan. I don't think I should be spending so much time with Morton Hoof.
Morton Hoof?
Yeah, you know, ruler of the wasteland, the Ayatollah of rock and rolla, lover of the animated arts.
The name is familiar. Can you describe him?
Well, he's big and muscular.
He has a deep voice?
Yes.
Ruggedly handsome?
I don't know. His face is usually covered with a metal hockey mask.
Assless chaps, his well-defined buttocks glimmering in the desert sun?
Yes. Shiny and chrome.
I see. And how do you feel when you see this Morton Hoof?
Well, happy, invigorated.
Lustful?
Hey, Dave! We got some more returns in. Can you give us a hand up here?
Dave, you have done nothing wrong. The only sin would be for you to deny what you truly love.
Hey, Dave, come on!
I'll be there in a minute! I gotta say, for someone who's not a Catholic priest, you're pretty good at this whole confession thing.
Thanks, I learned everything I know from Zorro.
Zorro?
Yeah, The Mask of Zorro. There's a great scene at a confessional in that movie. Don't you know? I mean, I see that scene played on the TVs in the store every day.
Oh, that's just the 90s promo reel that plays nonstop. We still haven't figured out how to turn that shit off. I've heard Aerosmith's I Don't Want to Miss a Thing so many times the words have lost all meaning.
Dave, what's going on? Who are you talking to?
Hey, guys, it's been a while.
Oh, hey, Jackie.
What were you guys talking about?
We were just talking about how great The Mask of Zorro is. Have you ever seen it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've seen that confession scene about 10,000 times since I started working here, but I don't think I've actually watched it all the way through since I was a kid.
Me neither. That movie's so great. How about we watch it now?
Good idea. I've been meaning to stock up on supplies anyway.
Great! Chad, load up the Mask of Zorro. I don't know about you guys, but I'm feeling vigorous.
Movie loaded, beginning playback.
Some say he's a legend.
Zorro was a servant of the people. He did what was needed.
Now he's needed again.
Others, a ghost.
Be careful, senorita. There are dangerous men about.
Some say he fights for justice.
There are some who would call him heroic.
Others for revenge.
All that playing with swords, shooting guns, racing around on horses. Such sweaty pursuits are hardly the work of a gentleman.
No one has seen his face.
Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned. I had impure thoughts about a man.
Lustful?
Yes, lustful.
But everyone knows his mark.
Not bad.
The only sin would be to deny what your heart truly feels.
Not bad at all.
Search everything!
You know Zorro. He could be anywhere. Did you miss me?
It's only one man.
It isn't just one man, damn it. It's Zorro.
Well, that was Mask of Zorro, and welcome back to another episode of Apocalypse Video, where lesson number 3 is getting to lesson number 4. I'm your host, David Snyder. I'm joined again by Ryan Caldwell.
Hello.
Michael Althaus. Whoopsh. And special guest, Jackie.
Oh, so rigorous.
Oh, calm down.
It's going to be really hard for me to keep this show from devolving into the Chris Farley show because I really have nothing bad to say about this movie. Well, let me ask you this. Is this the first watch for anybody here?
It was mine.
Wow.
Mike, have you seen this before?
I saw it in theaters.
Whoa.
I thought you hadn't seen it.
I hadn't seen it since theaters. I basically hadn't seen it, you know. I saw this in 1998 when it was in theaters, and I was 9. I remembered it as I was watching it, but it was basically like seeing it for the first time.
Yeah.
It still holds up. It is crazy to me how well this movie holds up. I hadn't seen this in years, and watching it here in the store, like, this, I mean, I feel like this must have what a must have would have been. I can't talk right now. I'm sorry. Zorro was here. I just saw him. And,
I'm so
thirsty.
He
was so vigorous. Oh, I'm all sweaty. But I imagine this is how people must have felt when they saw something like Indiana Jones for the first time. Because the action in this movie is so old school. And if you notice, like, there's not really a lot of close-up fighting. It's all very much shot in wide angles. It allows you to see everything. And it's just the stunt work and the choreography and the sword play and the suaveness on display from Anthony Hopkins and Antonio Banderas. It's just...
There's kind of some goofiness, some, like, old-school kind of, like, a silent film era, like, kind of goofball-ness going on in points, too. Like, kind of a, you know, like cartoony kind of action as well.
But it doesn't cross that line into like, this is stupid. Like it really wrangles it in and just, it's just a good time with the movies.
Yeah. It's always on the right side of,
it's like slightly there. It's like almost on the line. Yeah. Like, yeah.
But yeah, I really appreciated how many tropes it just completely, sincerely plays straight. Like, training montage / makeover time / like now you have to pretend to be upper crust and it's all just it's definition of like popcorn movie and even when it got into the like maybe too goofy but gosh it was really just a treat.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like one moment in particular that stuck with me you know, and talking about like riding the goofy line, and is this like basically becoming Looney Tunes? And it's when Antonio Banderas is like, it's kind of like a third of the way through, and he's like running away. He's cornered by like a cannonball with these people, and like he falls down and he grabs two tiny cannonballs and he's like bashing it against the head of, it's like a, basically like you could have directed that as like this, a scene of Game of Thrones. It's like horrific, and like the implications of this are like really gory,
but it's played as like pie in the face.
He's like Bugs Bunny at that point.
One inch away from having like the little birds, the little birds around his head as he's like stumbling away.
He does the whole thing. It's like he's like Bugs Bunny jumping around in that scene, and he like has the whole thing with the cannon. It's, I don't know, this was one I rewatched so much as a kid, and it, and the reason why I wanted to watch it, because I hadn't revisited it in so long, and it was on that, it was on the apocalyptic Netflix, you know, and so
Apocalyptic.
Well, you know, they're still workshopping it.
So it was kind of like, why haven't I watched that in a long time? Because I rewatched it probably like from, was it 98, 97 when it came out? Till probably like 2002, 2003, like all the time, and then didn't see it again.
That was your window, was 98 to like 2002, 2003?
Maybe one, you know, probably like, there's probably like a 5-year window in there, and then just like after that, just didn't see it again. Yeah. Like I never saw the sequel. Like, did you ever see the sequel?
Never even saw it.
You don't have to.
Yeah, never saw it. Love this movie.
It's unfortunate. We can address the sequel later, but it's unfortunate. My memory of it, because I went into the sequel loving the first one, thinking, being really excited, because it seemed like mostly everyone was back, same director, different writers, which you can address. But it just, it was, I think the problem with the sequel, if we're gonna touch on it here, is that it crosses that line and goes too goofy. Whereas this one kind of knew where the line was and only maybe dipped its toe across a little bit at times.
Yeah.
I mean, there was bits of it where you could see it, like the bad way this goes is like a shitty action comedy. Like what's that movie? Struber or whatever? Stuber?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, just the kind of jokes of like wacky hijinks and like the comedy's not working. But I don't think this does it. Like this definitely... I can't think of anything where I was like groaning or anything. It was all just like really wacky fun.
It like knew when to use Antonio Banderas like physical comedy and when to actually use him as like, I need to avenge my brother and this is like my whole life now.
And I think it's funny though too, I'm like the movie lead. Like knows he's hot and like is directed as if like he is the hottest thing alive, which I love.
Which is great because it's great because they lead into his hotness. They lead up to that, because the first time we see him, I could smell him. I feel like if this movie had smell-o-vision, he would be so rank.
How would you describe the smell?
Just sweaty and dirty and just like hadn't taken a bath for weeks. Like that's another thing I appreciate about this movie. Like people get dirty in this movie. You know what I mean?
They do desert. Explicitly addressed via Anthony Hopkins. Like, oh, you smell bad.
Yeah, they have a full on bath scene, and then he comes out of there like all beautiful.
And then, they cut his hair. He's all handsome. He's got a jawline revealed.
It was
Wait
funny.
A second, you could be Zorro.
Like this, just really briefly, I want to touch on like how much of the beginning of this movie is like tons of fake beards, which is
so
really, just fun. In this film.
It's so fun. Like beards I did not expect it. Yeah,
beards and wigs.
Yeah, for sure. It's nuts.
I really appreciate it.
It's like, I mean, I think it's super fun still, and there's definitely things that really stuck out with things I remembered like clear as day. And then there's a lot that I didn't. And it's probably like the times I maybe like stopped paying attention as a kid, you know, like in between action scenes or something.
I can definitely remember the things that I remember are all the like the most like horrific parts of it. Like the images of like the people sticking their hands out of the grates, like, like, you know, as they're about to be exploded and die.
That's and so like, crazy.
Jesus.
There was one other thing where it was the one where he shot the guy, like where the guy was like,
oh, the
going
coal
down,
miner,
oh,
going,
yeah.
the old coal miner, and then the bad guy just like shoots him.
Yeah, that bad guy.
I think
is
you're overlooking
else.
A big one, Mike.
What am I overlooking?
Head in a glass jar, big.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
That's
that
fun,
one
so weird.
Came out of yeah. left field for me.
That guy,
well, it's
yeah.
interesting. I for the longest
what a,
time
what a good
I thought
villain.
Like well, yeah, that, but for the longest time I thought like I love this movie, but that is such an extreme part in the movie where it's
oh, yeah.
just like did they, that's not something they did in the original like 40s Mask or Zorro movie.
That wasn't a callback.
Probably what? Yeah, probably not, but probably it's not. Interesting. I read in the Chattopedia, evidently there are a few people in this movie that were based on real people or that were real people. Like
I
that,
mean, colonization was incredibly violent, so I believe.
Well, it, well, yeah, but I mean, characters in this movie specifically were real people. That guy, Captain Harry Love, evidently was a real person, and supposedly. I say supposedly, he did do that. Supposedly, he cut off a guy's hand and head and put it in jars, like, as an example.
I mean, yeah, think about, like, an OG, like, straight-up, like, colonizer, because that's, like, who these
yeah,
people
yeah.
were meant to be. But then think of, like, what it would be like to be a colonizer in, like, the late 1800s. Like, you're, like, really showing up late to the game for, like, one purpose, and that's, like,
so wait,
shit
I,
like this, I feel like.
Forgive me for my ignorance of like actual history. Is the movie supposed to take place like pre or post American Civil War?
I think post.
Not pre.
Pre?
No, it's oh. pre. It's I think it's about
I think it's before 1849
because
they're
okay.
they're
yeah.
getting
oh,
it like
true.
It's before
yeah.
the 49 gold rush.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
That's all right.
Yeah. yeah.
But so yeah, you read the blonde-haired you know, Confederate ass dude as hey, I bet this guy's bad.
Yeah.
like,
yeah,
just,
he is just like straight up just a fucking snake. Like he has no yeah, redeeming qualities
he
about him.
He loves it.
Like
yeah,
even like
they
the
never try to,
even
to
like the Spanish governor of California has like he's definitely a bad guy, but like I'm like there was some sort of background where he like loved the original Zorro's wife or something, you know, and it's like a
yeah.
kind of a revenge
sure,
for
yeah.
himself, you know.
There's a humanity there. The
a
other
little
guy
bit,
is
yeah.
just straight up like, I put your brother's head in a jar.
I love to enslave people and cut people's heads off.
Yeah.
What if we're going to talk great. About the jar scene though? But just I know we're jumping all over the place already, Dave. As you
hey, hey, remember when you cut the guy's head off and put it in the jar? Was
well,
you
okay,
remember that
cool. Remember?
Yeah.
Remember how fucking cool it was when Antonio Banderas put his glass into the jar to
and
show
drank
that
drank his brother's head water.
Oh yeah, it was wine he had in there. Yeah, he had like he was keeping it like preserved with wine or something.
Yeah. Ugh.
Yeah,
he was pickling
like
his brother's head.
He drank the pickle juice of his dead brother to
pretty,
like show.
Yeah. Pretty brutal for PG-13, you know? I don't know.
Yeah, I know, right?
And it comes to like
crazy
that,
you can have that in Naboo.
Yeah, right. No nipples from Catherine Zeta-Jones. But no, I enjoy especially that and again, like you get to see some Antonio Banderas range and then that the scene following that with him and Anthony Hopkins when he's like, why are you telling me not to use my Zorro powers to like help these miners?
Yeah.
You've only taught me to like smile in the face of my brother's killer. And it's like an actually kind of, you know, powerful scene.
Yeah, that was good. That was great.
And you're like, yeah, this guy's got some genuine motivation.
This movie, a lot of it, like scenes like that, it's like, oh, this is like a superhero movie.
Yeah.
Oh, it is a superhero
oh,
movie.
Oh, yeah, big time.
It is Batman
I guess Zorro
Beyond.
Is a superhero.
All of, it's the Batman Beyond story
super,
is what it is.
His
Batman Begins?
Beyond.
Are, oh, the animated series?
It's Batman Beyond. It's the old Batman is basically, because Anthony Hopkins is playing the Zorro that we know from like the Disney show in the original
right.
movies. He's playing the old Zorro. And so this is like a sequel to that.
Oh, that was,
like it's The Force Awakens.
It is Batman Beyond.
And
oh,
where
really?
He's,
was the original Zorro set further back in time than this movie?
I think the time period
yes.
probably doesn't really, I don't know.
It was probably more vague. They probably cared a little less about,
yeah.
did the Mexican Revolution happen yet?
There's like pirates and yeah.
Yeah.
And so like, yeah, so this
California
is.
Will California be independent?
Yeah, so he does like one last mission, realizes he's too old, and he
yeah.
in the new Batman shows up, you know, the young guy, and he hands off the mantle to him, you know. But it's a yeah, it kind of has that it very superhero like, and it's really crazy because like the whole Batman origin story is like he saw Zorro with his parents, you know, and when they got shot in the alley. Like they were coming out of Zorro.
Yeah.
And so it all comes back
they were
around.
Coming out of like Zorro the opera.
The opera thing
it's
was
wild
later.
How much Batman. Yeah, it's wild how much Batman takes from Zorro. You got a guy in all black. You got like the Batcave, or in this the Fox's Lair, or the Lair of the Fox.
He's definitely like a member of the upper class who's like.
Yeah, he's a rich snooty alter ego. He has a Batmobile, or in this case, a giant horse.
Yeah, the Mark of Zorro is what they were seeing in Batman. They were seeing the Mark of Zorro movie, so which was from 19. What year did that come out? 1940. So
1940. Wow.
Okay.
Mark of Zorro, and so and that's what they're that's like the comic book thing is like they were coming out of that, and it's been changed. Like I think in like fucking the Joker movie, it's like what is it? Some stupid 70s like thing that kids would never go to. I don't know.
Well, yeah. I remember in the Zack Snyder Zorro movie, fucks. They were walking out of Excalibur.
Yeah, yeah. They changed the time.
Okay.
And stuff.
But yeah. I do really enjoy that detail about, I mean, just the callback to the whole concept of like Zorro, it's the 40s and how, yeah, we've kind of already mentioned how Mask of Zorro takes so many just like old Hollywood tropes and visuals and like honestly plays a lot of them straight and it's just like yep and then the swashbuckling happens.
Yeah. It's the most swashbuckling movie I've like
and
ever seen
and you're like oh great just
well even
just
even the whole Hollywood tropes of whitewashing Mexican characters like yeah, white people playing too. Mexican characters
well here's the thing
bronze
with that.
Up a it's, lot of English they, people
yeah they bronze up Anthony Hopkins a little oh bit God. they don't go too crazy. It seems like there are levels. There are levels of the bronze with Anthony Hopkins. At times, it seems like it's a little bit more than it was in other scenes. But having said that, damn, he is good at this movie.
He's so good. He's so good.
He is so good.
I kept on getting distracted by where the wig on his forehead was moving the bronzer.
I think he's so good.
It was apparent.
That was the uncanny valley. Like,
yeah.
If you look at like, if you look at that goatee. Like moment, that little space, yeah.
Well, having I mean, his wig in the beginning when he's younger, Anthony Hopkins is bad. It is straight up bad.
But he's still good though. It's better than like
he's
CGI.
Good. And it's
still
fun. Talented actor, like, so. It's the same for me as like the like switching the ethnicities is not fun, but the terrible hair and makeup. I mean, terrible hair and makeup's not fair, but it's very like
it's
stagey,
theatrical.
Like, yeah. Yes, I feel like it's fun. It has like this whole movie has like a very like play vibe. Like there's so much of it that you know is fake. Like the way they sword fight, it's like totally they're all aiming for like 5 feet ahead of like where they're standing and like this isn't how there's any reason to fight like this. It's not realistic, but it's just like fun.
It's so very like, and here is the fight choreography because it's, you know, it's choreography.
Well,
because it's
you know, like
especially
it's such a dancey kind of like fighting.
Yeah.
And it's very clear when they switch to stunt people too. Like like I mentioned before, the wide angle lenses, like in the beginning with younger Zorro. Oh, so I guess we're a little bit deep in. Maybe we already missed our opportunities to give the synopsis of this movie, but basically
Zorro's old and then he's young.
Perfect.
It's Batman Beyond. If you know that, then that's what it is, basically.
Exactly.
You gotta pass
but anyway,
the torch.
Everyone knows. Yeah, it's passing the torch.
It's like the best superhero. Like this is how superhero movies should be in a weird way. Like I don't know. Like it's. I'm trying to think of one.
Alfred
that's,
just should have been Bruce Wayne. Is that like?
Well, Anthony Hopkins plays Alfred at a moment in this movie when he's like Bernardo?
Fernando.
Yeah, like
he looks so
plays
cool
Alfred.
In that. I don't know why. He looks so cool, and he's like the little
servant. It's with the
servant.
Like ponytail and glasses.
Yeah.
He looks cool at every stage of this movie. Like, I love every costume change he has. But as I was saying earlier, like, yes, his wig for younger him is admittedly bad. But there's something about Hopkins, like, he has energy in this movie. Like, he is, like, I don't remember how old he was when he did this. I want to say he was, like, in his late 50s. And, in fact, he almost turned this down because he was having back pain. But he had, like, some sort of laser surgery, which allowed him to take the role. But, like, that scene when he is, I say, younger Anthony Hopkins, like, when he walks out of, like, his hidden fireplace entrance or whatever, and he's wearing that vest and the black pants. Like, I mean, granted, like I said, like I was hinting at, like, every time they cut to stunt people, it's clear, like, oh, suddenly Zorro lost 20 pounds. What happened? But having said that, he still looks good. And, like, even the scenes when it's in it, when it is clearly him fighting, like, I've never seen Anthony Hopkins look this, what's the word? Energetic.
He has like a swagger. Like, yeah. There's something about the way he carries himself.
A very, confident physicality where you don't necessarily, like, you think about his age, but then you're like, oh, but yeah, like, he's still obviously very fit.
Yeah.
Feel like every other time during the training montage, it would cut to him and he's like lounging with a pipe or like eating an apple or so something, cool. Where you're like, oh, okay.
He's got his shirt open, still, his chest exposed.
Yeah. He's a very sensual being still.
During that first...
About, right?
Yeah. Like, during that opening scene where it's like, we're in the somewhat, a little bit of like 20 years before the movie kind of kicks into gear, and we're seeing Zorro's last ride, Anthony Hopkins Zorro. And basically, there's like the kids that are eventually Antonio Banderas and his brother are like cheering him on and shit. I felt like I was like crying with them. I was like, yeah, this is so cool. Like, it's like the most, I was just like, realized like that is, those kids are supposed to be like the audience watching that. Cause I remember I just had flashbacks to as a kid watching this and being so stoked on it. And it's cool, really, having those kids be there. Yeah.
Now, like, you grow up to be Zorro.
Yeah. It's like, it's for some reason, that was such a good idea. Whoever wrote that, or if Martin Campbell had directed it, like, had that idea. I don't know. Whoever idea it was to have those kids there puts you, like, in this weird perspective for this scene. And you're like, and it's almost like, fuck yeah. I mean, it's like, you're like Rey and you're hearing about Luke Skywalker in Force Awakens. You know, you're just like, Luke Skywalker's real? Zorro's real?
One of my favorite shots of this movie is when, like, there's all the unrest in the courtyard or whatever. People are about to be shot, and that kid gets thrown to the ground, and like, you see that low angle shot of, like, Zorro's, like, black, like,
skin, his shiny, like, boots.
Shiny boots. And it's such a cool shot. I love that shit.
I didn't think about this, Ryan, but what you were saying about the kids, like, I feel like you kind of take it for granted, but doing that, it did like a magic trick, because then when you meet Zorro, like the next Zorro, Antonio Banderas, you've already like established who he is and like you're rooting for him without having to have like done anything other than just do that first scene you wanted to do with Zorro.
It really hammers home that like he's a legend for a reason, because he shows up and like does shit like this. Like, of course you're gonna be like, so I fucking love Zorro.
Like, that's what's funny you bring that up, because I was trying to think of like, because like that's my only really now as an adult watching this critique, is I think you could have had another 15 minutes with Antonio Banderas and his brother before like he dies. His brother gets killed, and that's like his superhero origin story right there. And I feel like you should have had a little bit more time with them, and that's my only critique. I know it's like, it's really like streamlined the
movie's
movie.
Already like long.
It is a long movie.
My only complaint with the movie is I feel like you could cut some stuff out. I feel like that,
like the romance.
Yeah, I don't think you need that. Like, all you need, like, it's his brother obviously, and they've like
You know what, but he doesn't even like talk at all. Like, he doesn't really talk until he's like with Anthony Hopkins. You know, you don't really get like to sit down with him really, and that's like
he's really just critique. Like the fridge. Like, thing? Like, he's when they say when someone is fridged.
I feel like we get just like a taste of their kind of like comedic back and forth that they use for like, Robin Hooding.
Yeah, it's more like kind of westerny a little bit.
And it's like, it's fun and goofy, but then it again like goes hard left to like, and then his brother gets beheaded.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay.
Well. Yeah. If there was just like a tiny bit more, and I know, and it's funny because as a kid, like, I'm all about Antonio Banderas, of course. Like, I'm all about Puss in Boots, you know, and and for some reason,
iconic role.
Yeah, this time around, like, I was more invested in Anthony Hopkins, and maybe it's because I was older and stuff, and I just think, like, it's more of Anthony Hopkins' movie in a weird way. Like, just not having, like, the Antonio Banderas, like, first act. Like, the first act is so rushed with him, you know, kind of thing, for his character.
It's definitely, I think, Mikey, you're onto something. Like, by transitioning the role of Zorro to Antonio Banderas, like, it allows us to sort of just, like, fast forward, like, his backstory. It's like, yeah, we get broad strokes with his backstory, his brother. We get a sense that he's sort of Robin Hood-ish, like the, his brother, like they give like the people at that place like some money, whatever. And he, you know, he does this little wave. It's very, very, it's done very, very quickly, but it is efficient. And by giving the role of Zorro to him, you're basically transferring all that goodwill from Hopkins Zorro to now Banderas Zorro. And I see what you're getting at, Ryan, but it's just like when a movie's already this long, it's just like at some point you got to start using broad strokes.
It just seems like they're more invested with Hopkins, and he's like, you know, Oscar winner at this point and stuff, and I'm sure they're like, well, we got Hopkins, we got to use him. And but yeah, he does that whole I wanted to bring this up because I just watched Silence of the Lambs recently. And he does the same trick in Silence of the Lambs with like the dead body and like the and the guards taking the wrong person away.
You know? It's true, yeah.
He does the same trick.
Switch places with this dead or dying body. It's okay. It's
There's some Hannibal Lecter in the way he plays this character.
It's cunning.
That's charm.
That's Don Diego Pedri. Damn it! Now help him.
There are some great... I think one of my top five things that I like about this movie that I was... A lot of it is like, to me, a big takeaway of this movie is like, they don't make them like this anymore. I mean, you know, they don't make anything anymore, but back when they did, they didn't. They stopped making them like this. Yes, exactly. And one of the things about that I was thinking of, there's a lot of things, but... It was the amount of extra work in this show. Like, there's army of extras in this movie, and they are working their asses off and doing a great job at it. It is so delightful. These crowd shots are incredible. And they're all like fun.
Yeah, it really goes to show how granted, there are movies that use CGI for crowd shots, and it's fairly seamless, but, like, you could just, I feel like you could just tell when it is an actual crowd of people surrounding a place, like, when, what's his name, Rafael Montero shows up on the shore, and you got all those people lined up, like, and there's just levels, you got people just up and up and up and up, and you could just tell it's real.
The difference for me is when you see a crowd shot that is obviously CG, as long as it looks okay, I feel like it's fine. It's just like, oh, a crowd shot, whatever.
But it's not as impressive.
Yeah, when it's like, when you have a crowd shot that's real, it's immediately like a spectacle. And it is cool. Like, there's no denying it.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like, I think you're onto something. This is kind of like the last of its kind, really. Like, that's so earnest, and the way the action is shot is very pulled out. Like a few years after this, we would get the Bourne movies, and suddenly everyone switched, and it's like, oh, well, we gotta, it's all close-ups, and you gotta cut. And like, I just appreciate that I can tell what's going on. And again, I don't mind that when it zooms out, it's clearly stuntmen. I don't mind because I can appreciate the...
It's like the fake beards.
Yeah, it's like, I don't care. It's, you know what I mean? It's
see the craft of these people who are really good at performing this sword fight.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, you guys mentioned, like, it felt like a play at times. Like, when I go to a play, I don't care that obviously these sets aren't real, that they're sets. You get invested in the story and the action and the spectacle.
You know what this movie is? It's like when you go to a theme park and they have, like, it's Waterworld. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's very effective at that. And I like, speaking of just, like, the earnestness, the like extra work, it's like it doesn't care about the, like, this is pre, you know, YouTube culture, like 50 reasons why The Mask of Zorro is a logic fail.
I'm sure that exists.
But it's like, it never, the movie itself doesn't concern itself with, like, well, yeah, if Zorro is fighting 50 people that he you know, accidentally ended up in the barracks, like, of course they're not going to attack one at a time for him to do all his tricks. That's not the point.
Oh, man, there's some real heavy, like, wait your turn to fight Zorro.
People bitching about...
Watch this cool choreography, so, like, chill out.
Yeah, like, in... not to bring it back to Star Wars, but I'm always going to have to at least once per episode. But,
you know who you are, Ryan. It's okay.
But last... Like, I've seen people... Like, for instance, there's a YouTube kind of breakdown video of, like, visual effects artists that kind of, like, look over visual effects and, like, talk about how they did it. and what's bad, what's good. And sometimes I'm like, this is pretty interesting, and like I'm learning something. Every once in a while, though, they have some, like, they get picky about it, and they get, you know, 50 reasons why this sucks, yeah, kind of thing. And they had a stunt guy talking about the throne room scene in Last Jedi, and how like the red boys like turn around and like stop and wait, you know, to fight and stuff like that. Like, and like, there's like one that scene where
they really had one of those, like, oh, in this fight scene,
in
it was
life,
actually,
they wouldn't,
yeah, they're like, oh my god, they're waiting for protagonist. It's like, these guys obviously don't watch movies and realize like that is a thing that's been going on for 100 years. It's just like, exactly. And it's real. Would you
every
rather have
fucking action movie is your main character is mowing down everybody? That's like, yeah, the point.
And you're not focused on those guys in the background. You're looking at this. It's yeah. If you're looking at those things, then something else isn't working, and you're not fucking eye fucking the movie. You know, that's what we call it in production
in the
world, is like frame fucking is what we call it. Frame fucking is when you,
I guess that's a little,
is that what better. Is that what we call it, or is what you call it?
That's what like edit, like a direct, like if your producer or director is like watching a thing and they're like, why is that thing out of place there? Because they're like frame fucking the movie by just going frame by frame and looking for like things that are wrong. Oh, and anyway,
cool.
It's annoying as fuck.
I think a prime example of this reminds me, and it kind of goes into this movie, which was produced by Spielberg, and at one point he was considering directing this movie. But I think the best example of that frame fucking, finding problems with things like that when you're supposed to be focusing on something else, is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade. At the very end, when Indy gives him the cup and it's got the water in it, and you know, Sean Connery drinks it and it's fine, he's fine again, and then he pours all the water on his chest wound and the wound disappears.
Yeah.
In the next shot, you can see that there's still a little bit of water left in there, and the reason that it's still there, obviously it's a goof, but Steven Spielberg's not looking at that shit. Steven Spielberg is making sure that you're getting the emotion of the scene, that you're getting the, you know, just that you're getting the look of just like from Sean Connery saying like, oh shit, I'm not dead, and oh shit, it's the Holy Grail, you know. He's not paying attention to if there's a little bit of residual water in the cup.
This reminds me of our like 2020 version of this YouTuber was. It feels like to me like some rich person in like a salon in Paris and like 1850 who's like looking at like a painting like, oh, you know, there's actually not yellow in the sky.
that's literally what like our academic art movements are about, of like, you fucking piece of shit impressionist, that's not what a flower looks like.
Yeah. it reminds me, because this watch like Portrait of a Lady on Fire, and in that movie she's like, what, she's like critiquing one of her paintings, and she's like, where doesn't this is what you think I look like, or something like that, and she's like, there's rules or something, and then like, is it, and they kind of mention that like, then where's the heart in it, or something like that, you know? You know, but it's, yeah, I don't know.
Do you know
so
what
just
art
remind
is?
Me of that.
It's almost like visual arts and visual mediums are as much about feeling as they are literal depictions of things.
Yeah, so don't frame fuck things. You'll find more, there's more
try
water bottles in shots
movies
than just Game of Thrones. It's just, you have to frame fuck.
You were just really
it.
Mad. And looking for everything you
like
can find.
Like, you're already feeling some feelings about it.
Like, you can't appreciate something like Antonio Banderas surfing down a hill with a shovel if you're frame-fucking things. You
yeah.
just can't appreciate those finer things.
Him riding two horses, one leg on
so
each
good.
Horse.
Multiple times, on multiple different pairs of horses.
You know, Zorro-ing... Catherine Zeta-Jones's dress off, you know? But I was frame-fucking that one, you know, but...
No, I bet you are. Speaking of the Catherine Zeta-Jones stuff,
I'm gonna have to
though,
leave the store.
That's the one area where it did feel the most dated to me, because it was such a, like... textbook 90s Disney princess empowerment kind of character of like,
I can fight back too,
you know what, I actually know how to use a sword,
and now I'm gonna go back to my like stereotypical character,
and,
like after that scene,
and yeah. And I mean, again, like, I don't need it to be so complex. Obviously, I'm content with Catherine Zeta-Jones being incredibly beautiful on screen because that's what movies are about. But like, it was just kind of stark.
It's a little bit. Yeah.
She had to. I'm sure she was in other movies prior to this, but I feel like this is the one that where she really blew up.
She popped.
Am I the only one that had that?
It's so as in terms of like the 1940s-ness of like the action. It's very 1940s of like, and here is your starlet.
You know? What else is she like known for?
She was in I guess I don't know if that was before 98, but she was in what is it called? That they just remade with Zoe Kravitz.
Oh, Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11?
Oh, no, sorry. Chicago. My bad. Wrong remake. Oh yes, oh, she was in Chicago.
High Fidelity, you're talking about.
Yeah, High Fidelity. She was one of the like girlfriends in High Fidelity in an even more two-dimensional role of like she's so cool and hot and cool, period, the end. Which again, like, yeah, you know, duh casting. Obviously Catherine Zeta-Jones is super duper hot. But then just like nothing else to her character. But even by the time you get to Chicago in 2002, which I think she's like even hotter in, and she's like, she doesn't have the Hollywood like skinny arms, and it's a much meatier role, and you get to actually see her do cool shit instead of just like, and here I am in my corset with my sword. And oh man. Yeah. Again, like, yeah, I don't need such complexity or deepness from The Mask of Zorro, but the Catherine Zeta-Jones element did kind of stand out. And her accent,
it's like one of those tropes that was very bad. It's one of those it's one of those tropes that, because this movie is so earnest in following all those old school swashbuckler tropes, that it's one where it's like, oh well, this is one of those tropes that didn't necessarily age well.
Yeah, you're like, yeah, so it's a little like a flimsy love interest, and it's like that one, you know, maybe you could have fleshed out a little bit more.
Yeah, and because I think for the most part it was kind of smart at like discarding certain things from. You know,
that's the only one that's really stuck around.
And yeah, that I mean, there's some other stuff too that, you know.
What about their dance though? Like, that was so sexy, wasn't it? I don't know.
I mean, again, like, you're not you don't have too many hurdles to get over putting Catherine Zeta-Jones and Antonio Banderas in a sexy dance together.
That's their sex scene right there, you know.
So speaking of frame fucking, let's talk about
she's
the tango scene.
Her hair.
All right, I'm out of here. See you later.
So there's two scenes that I frame fucked. It was the tango scene.
Okay, you have to stop. Sorry. I'm sorry I brought that up.
I'm sorry, I have that defect. there's two scenes. The tango scene and the scene where Zorro and Elena fight. And in both scenes, it is like, I don't know if she's just acting extremely well or if it's just if she was like overcome by... Or if Antonio Banderas dance fucked her, like, because like, there's like when they do the last bow, she like does this move where she like grabs his head and just like grips. And there's also another scene later when like they're kissing and it's like orgasmic, and it's just and it's interesting. And this might just be chalk this up to IMDb trivia, but.
Oh my god, Michael just had an orgasm. That's what the sound it is.
But supposedly, in an interview, Catherine Zeta-Jones said that it was hard for her not to get aroused during the fight scene with Antonio Banderas.
Ooh. Hell yeah.
I mean, I believe it.
I guess what I'm saying is, to put it more delicately, I'm sorry I was so vigorous with that description, Mike.
I got it.
They really sell the suaveness and the sexiness of Banderas and Hopkins, so much so where it's one of those things. Yes, and it like blurs the line a little bit. We're like, goddamn, like she. I really got it. I got that she was like hot for Banderas. It was, I don't know. All right, next topic.
Hey, I will defend in like the trashy romance novel kind of side of it, like.
It is that.
It's what it is. It's the like breathless heroine, like, oh, this man with the sword. Ooh.
Yeah,
and
like there was a point in this movie where I was like thinking, like, this was like my own mom loves this movie.
Exactly. And, moms love this kind of shit.
I bet. Yeah, I was like, this is for moms. Like, a lot of this movie, I feel like.
Or prepubescent boys. Yes.
That's also, yeah. And prepubescent, yeah, anybody.
There's a lot of crossover in that demographic.
Yeah, and that's the response they want us certain audience members to have of like, oh, this man with the sword.
Do you surrender?
Never. But I may scream.
I understand. Sometimes I have that effect.
That was the trailer moment. Was Zorro like that? That's the one that's stuck in the trailer. Is basically him. It's quiet, no music, and it's him going just making a thing.
Yeah, and then her clothes fall off.
And then her clothes falling off, and that's like the cut to black. Is like her clothes falling off. You know, that was like the big
that's
trailer.
That's what they
moment.
Like went with.
Yeah,
with the,
they
that's
were like
not
it's sexy Zorro.
That was it. That was the in the trailer. That's like the last thing in the trailer.
In which
that is a
I,
bad
like
idea.
After well, the I title think... comes up and then it goes back. It's like the tease, like the end.
Trailer just should have been the bumper that they used for like the actual thing. It was so cool. They have like a James Bond style, like he comes out and does like a Z and there's explosions.
Dude, that's what I have as my first thing of coolest thing ever. And there's like this roar from
it's
like
the
a
best.
Like a lion. It's like
that was the thing throughout the whole movie. Yeah. Is when there were explosions, there was
there
in the
were
mix
animal
like
roars.
Animal roars. That was for all the explosions.
That's an old school thing though.
Back to yeah. the
it was really noticeable in this yeah. in a way.
Real quick, back to the Zeta Jones clothes removal. Because I was very young when this movie came out, but I do have like memories of that commercial and it being like
it was in every commercial. That was it.
It's so funny because yeah, it's so Hollywood to like lead to this. You know, swashbuckling, but also, you know, silly, romantic kind of just popcorn movie with like, well, we got to get the boys involved. We want to make sure the boys want to see it.
I bet this trailer aired in, when you were watching Batman Beyond.
Probably, yeah. I've always watched my cartoon.
Yeah,
they
probably.
Were like, we got to tell them that, you know, Catherine Zeta-Jones is going to be really sexy in it. And it's like, yeah, she is. But also, you know that the grown women are going to see it to see Antonio Banderas. So fucking have some balls and market to them.
Well, he was still pretty new, too. Like, both of them are kind of like, I mean, they had movies before, but these are their first, both of them, they're both their first big
sure,
movies,
yeah.
big Hollywood movies.
I definitely saw this with my mom, and she definitely thought like Zorro were known quantities with both of us, and she knew who Antonio Banderas was and like liked him. So I don't know what he had been in.
He was in Philadelphia.
Oh yeah, Philadelphia.
Oh, that's
serious,
right. That's where 100%. That's where my mom would have seen him and like, oh, I love that man.
That might
well,
have
I think,
been like
I think
one
his
of his
big
only
movie.
Big roles.
His big movie prior to this was a few years prior. It was Desperado. That was kind of the one that kind of got him
okay.
a lot of attention.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not talking about Assassins with him and Sylvester Stallone. No one's talking about Assassins. I think it was Desperado and definitely this. And I got to imagine like how pumped Antonio Banderas must have been when they're like, you get to be Zorro now. He's like, what?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because he's not super young. Like, I mean, he's not old at all. But
I
but
think
he's not like a...
Let me see. I'm looking at it. And I think that was his first Hollywood movie. The rest are all kind of Spanish and Mexican movies, I think.
Yeah.
Philadelphia was, because he didn't
even
speak English.
That's
surely.
Interesting. Like, yeah. So we mentioned that Anthony Hopkins clearly isn't Spanish, but Antonio Banderas isn't Mexican. He is Spanish,
yeah.
playing
yeah.
a Mexican. So it, there's a lot of like
Jones
interesting.
Is Welsh.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going around there.
Oh, yeah.
As we were watching the movie. Stuff. I was pulling up the Chad DB, and there's a lot of interesting could have beens with this movie, mostly regarding casting.
Oh.
I mentioned Sean Connery earlier with Indiana Jones. He was approached to play the original Zorro part.
I'm glad it's Anthony Hopkins.
Wait, who was it?
Same here.
Sean Connery.
Oh, wow.
That's
he was
Zorro.
For yeah. Yeah.
He was, I think he was too old. Well, I don't know. The same year he came out with The Rock, or a year prior. So he was still vital at the time. This is sort of Sean Connery's late period action resurgence a
sure.
little bit. But I don't think he would have been right. Plus, he was already the Highlander, so or, you know, he was in the Highlander, so you already got that. You got your sword swashbuckler thing, like,
also,
you know, stay
like,
in your lane.
It's Sean Connery. He was not gonna even like, not that Anthony Hopkins was doing like a Spanish accent, but Sean Connery would just be out there being like, Elena, my daughter.
Well, it's funny because in Highlander he plays a Spaniard.
Yeah, Sean Connery does Sean Connery's accent.
Exactly. But you say Anthony Hopkins doesn't have a... He puts a tiny Spanish
tiny
tinge.
Tiny flair on it.
It's very tiny.
It's like Dick Van Dyke doing the British
not
accent.
Not quite that.
Chim chimney Mary Poppins.
Like, I'm still behind, and sometimes we're in Mexico.
Yeah. You overlook it because like, I think Hopkins, his voice has that like... That very, I mean, he could. I could see him sort of easily back into a Spanish-ish accent a little bit. The way his voice is very, very like they say in the movie, like, well, it's a very good voice or whatever she says.
Well, I think part of, you know, in a lot of languages, like the like rich, fancy, snooty people all kind of like have
exactly,
this a certain
yeah.
kind of voice, and he does that at least very yeah. well.
He and you get Anthony Hopkins again, very good voice. You get him in the right kind of pitch and zone, and
he's an incredible
and class
actor.
Level. Like, yeah, you're like, okay, I buy it, sure.
But it definitely would have been better to have someone like more fit for that role. But
he's good though.
Yeah,
that's just crazy. Yeah,
he is good.
It's such a bummer. It's like you're like trying to be, you know. Maybe it should be a Spanish guy, but I'm like thinking about it. I'm like, but he's just like, I don't know. Knocks it out of the park, and it's too bad.
He got nominated for a Golden Globe for this movie.
Oh, good for him. No, I mean, it's true. It's a great performance, but the
because you believe him.
Situation across the board is definitely unfortunate.
Yeah,
it's the prancing. And I noticed this even with the Antonio Banderas side of it. There was like the scene in with the evil captain or whoever when he brings out the brother's head in the jar. You see like. A certain time of Antonio Banderas from like the back, and you can see his jaw and neck, and it's just these two starkly different colors of makeup, and it's again, I mean, speaking of frame fucking, but like stuff yeah. like that, where you know, yeah, of course this man speaks Spanish, you know that you know he's very attractive, but man, they browned him up as much as they could.
Yeah, it's yeah. just weird.
It's
like
it's even weird, for 98, yeah. you're like, oof, I don't know.
It's a little bit. It's late for that, for sure.
Yeah,
yeah.
But
like, what are we doing here, guys?
Like I thought, Catherine Zeta-Jones. I thought she was Hispanic, like my whole life, basically. Until
yeah.
when did you find it? Did you find out when Jackie said she was Welsh just now?
No, like there's been since this movie got put on the Apocalyptic Flicks, you know, whatever we're calling it, the. Like on the Wasteland Twitter, this movie's kind of made a resurgence. So it's kind of been a lot of people talked about it, and then they were like, and have mentioned that they're like, this movie's so great. It's not quite too. It's not really woke, but it's definitely really a fun movie.
I mean, Hollywood definitely tried like cast Catherine Zeta-Jones as like ambiguously ethnic for a while because it's like. A Welsh accent sounds like weird enough where you're like, that could be a bunch of things, right?
On the flip side, though, like, you know,
she's kind of olive tone, sort of in a pale way.
She is what we're looking for stock footage when we used to make stock footage in dark
the old hair, day. Dark eyed beauty.
In another,
any race.
In another way, the movie is like, feels like oddly more modern. In the, like, it's very like. Basically, like, screw the rich and, like screw the 1%. And, like, the bad guy is, like, America, basically.
America
like,
who will sacrifice any number of lives.
Yeah, like, it is, like, I was watching it thinking, like, this is, like, interesting. Like, the bad, like, there's a couple bad actors, but definitely the worst, like, merciless people here are the American government. And,
yeah,
like that Wait, was what? It is interesting that like the main villain,
the captain guy,
the captain. Oh, I see. Okay. Well, but, I thought I was like governor... I don't remember seeing this. Like he's the only American we see in the movie. That's what I mean.
Like, and he's and like their kind of threat is like it's almost like they're having like their own thing, and this is like this omnipresent, like the Empire or something. Like it was just it was interesting that was like there was no positive about like America or like the U.S.
player.
Dude, then when he shrieks at the end, like, I was like, what are you doing, man?
The only American in this movie is literally buried by his own, like, gold that he's trying to, like, steal from the native people that he's, like, going to kill without, like, any thought in the world.
Speaking of which, like, as a kid, I don't think it ever really dawned on me the fact that they were at El Dorado. The climax of this movie takes place at El Dorado.
Yeah.
Which is just crazy. I mean, obviously, like, in my mind, El Dorado, I think, like, jungle and, like, you know, exotic stuff like that. But this is, like, I don't know, it's Mexico.
California,
and it's, like, a desert.
California,
they say California, too, just like Schwarzenegger. I thought that was interesting that they pronounced it California.
Well, he was not the governor at this point.
It's I don't know, for some reason that always intrigued me because, like, growing up in Arizona and just, like, the idea of, like, Mexico being California and Arizona and all that stuff, like, for some reason that all intrigued me, just, like, the idea of, like, oh, wow, this is where Zorro ran around and all this stuff, I don't know, just, like...
Like, was it that, like, Zorro, you were there, like, oh, this is, like, a thing set where I live, kind of?
Kind of, yeah, but it's, like, this, because, you know, just here in, like, California in this old-timey thing that, you know, it feels so European... You know, in a weird way, just kind of because of the Spanish and stuff, and
yeah,
I don't know, and mostly like swashbuckling stuff, like Count of Monte Cristo and all that stuff was all kind of you know, I don't know, it always seemed like it was far off lands, and this happened to be in your own backyard.
Swashbuckling in my own backyard.
Yeah, like it's always on pirate ships in the Caribbean, you know, like swashbuckling. But
not the Caribbean's at my house, Mom.
I just love that. I don't know. For some reason, that always just intrigued me because I'm like, I know Mexicans.
It's like I'm there.
Yeah, this around this time, it's I love sword. I don't know, like the sword fighting stuff was all about it. I don't know, just love sword fighting.
So you had a good sword. What'd you think of the sword fighting montage in the first like 5 minutes of the? Well, I guess after the opening scene, there's
that reminds me. This movie. Go ahead, Ryan. Sorry, I don't want to cut off.
I'm just jizzing over sword fighting. Sorry, keep you know.
Well, I was jizzing over something else. The sword fighting was great. The stunt work was great. One thing I love that this movie has are flips. There are so many flips in this movie. Like Zorro is always flipping around, and it's some of my favorite moments in the movie are when he does like a flip to get out of a situation, or if he like especially this isn't necessarily a flip, but like in the beginning when Anthony Hopkins starts his sword fight with Montero as the house burns down around them, he like leaps down like four stairs like Errol Flynn, and it's just like just again he somehow miraculously loses.
He travels by flip.
Yes,
it's so many flips and like superfluous, but also just like perfect, like cape kind of swishing around. Like,
oh my god,
it'll be even with like as punctuation, like when he first kind of comes across Catherine Zeta-Jones and is like, I should. You know, be careful of dangerous men. He goes up the stairs and then flips the cape around.
I just thought that was funny. I was going to bring that up because in that scene, he hasn't done anything heroic yet. He just like walked past her and they did this whole thing, like a pose on the stairs, you know.
it was framed beautifully.
It'll be that. But then even like in the scene after that, when he's fighting all the guys in the barracks, you know, in between swashbuckling with two dudes, he'll do a fucking like cape twirl around, and it's just so.
Well, he's getting into character.
Oh, it's so theatrical and perfect.
It reminds me of that scene in The Incredibles about like fucking cape. It's gonna get in the way.
No capes.
No capes.
No capes. The that would have been a CGI cape today. You know.
God. And it's like, there's nothing like the real thing.
There wouldn't have been a cape today.
Yeah, you can't duplicate that with CGI.
Yeah, you couldn't have a cape today unless you want a YouTube video that's like, capes are logically a fail. And...
Well, what would happen is like, Henry Cavill would shoot another movie with like a different cape, and he would refuse to take the cape off. And they'd have to like CGI replace the cape. Yeah, with another cape.
There's another thing I little... thing I noticed. There's a scene. It's when Hopkins in his sweet ass butler gear, when he's kind of playing undercover. He does that Inglourious Basterds like guard kill. Do you remember like in Inglourious Basterds when they're going to the balcony and it's the other guy that's with Eli Roth has like the tray and there's like the punch at the guard.
Oh,
he
does that whole thing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The,
bad move.
Yeah.
Can you hold this?
Here, could you hold it?
Yeah. He does the same exact thing in Inglourious Basterds. Like, I think people must, because I think I saw all three of Nolan's Batman movies are in this movie. And I know we keep going, like, Batman took a lot from Zorro.
Oh, my God. Like, I was just talking about, like, you know, like, the 1% can, like, go to hell. That's, like, number three of those Batman movies.
Yeah. And, like, so you have, like, the Batman Begins. Like, there's, like, the training stuff with Hopkins and is straight out of Batman Begins. Like, just, absolutely. Like, the sword fighting.
You have to cut your hair.
There was something from Dark Knight, and I can't remember what it was. But
Crazy villain.
In Dark Knight Rises, there's the whole thing with like the symbol with on fire that kind of signals like the that Zorro's back.
Straight up Zorro, man.
That was Nolan in fucking Dark Knight Rises.
Zorro, oh my God, you're right.
Like, time to just
the thing that Anthony Hopkins lights up at the end.
And it's either and I don't know if that's an old thing from like the old Zorro stuff, but and that's maybe where or maybe just Nolan just was like, yeah, let's just do all Zorro shit, because that's what, you know, inspired Batman.
That movie was cool.
Because Zorro fucking fucks.
There was something else, too, in Dark Knight Rises that stuck out to me, too. But just, like, lots of things. Like, just such a Batman story. And that we're just so totally ingrained with Batman. We know more than that than Zorro. And it's just crazy that they're the same character.
More characters can be in black masks.
Yeah. They're the same character. The Zorro and Batman. So...
they want cool. justice.
One thing I appreciate, like, so, like, speaking of Batman, like, it's funny how this movie has a lot of those superhero touchstones. Like, I feel like this could be like the Zorro CU or something.
Absolutely.
Like, cinematic universe. Like, I like that they distinguish the costumes between the two of them. Like, Hopkins's costume it's a lot more Spanish looking, whereas, Banderas has like much more Mexican vibe to it, you know.
That's really just
the look of it.
Yeah, like the
It's really. I like that they do that. I like that they give each of them like their own like unique. Even though it's ironic because Banderas is Spanish, but they're where they are, but or whatever. But I like that they did that. And again, it's. I really like just like the pacing of the movie and the time things happen. It really does feel like a superhero movie. Like when he becomes Zorro for the first time, he doesn't have the outfit right away. He has like that kind of shitty looking. He has to earn it. He looks like a shitty pirate at first. He gets his mask off of a horse's wound and just puts it around his face.
And then you even have that moment with old Zorro where it's like, you think you do this and you can wear the mask and you know what it means. Like, I love that scene. That's I've seen that scene a million times, but
It's crazy. Originally, like, the director, Martin Campbell, didn't want to have the whip in the movie. And it's just like, you have to have the whip. Like, Hopkins insisted on the whip. He practiced with the whip. He's like, no way. This is, like, essential Zorro equipment. You cannot have Zorro without the whip.
I love that Hopkins
looks great with a whip.
Oh God.
He's so good with those,
getting
out those candles and shit.
A whip very well.
That's my favorite version of Anthony Hopkins, not just in this movie, but in general, like him holding the whip with the really tall, like knee high boots, the shirt open, and like his that hair, you know, the wig, like kind of long hair, and he's got like the pencil thin mustache and goatee, like that's primo Hopkins.
And how open is his shirt?
I liked the one with the long hair and the beard and the dirty one when he was like in the jail. You know?
Wearing like a poncho.
I was gonna say, do you think
Jean Valjean?
Like he like tricked. You know, he got out of jail pretty easily. Do you think that was his first time in the 20 years that he tried to escape?
Okay, so that I was confused about that as well when we watched it, because in my mind, I didn't super understand like who it was that was coming to like look for him. I didn't realize it was like the main guy at first.
Yeah, the Spanish,
and so
president or whatever.
Yeah. And so I didn't realize. I guess the implication is it's supposed to be, you know, that he carted him right off from his burning house to the jail where Hopkins has been ever since. But watching the scene for the first time, I assumed like, well, he probably like broke out and he's been around, he's, you know, came and went, and then he ended up back in this place, right? But I you know, that's totally conjecture, so I don't know.
I assumed he'd just been in there, but I don't have anything to base that off of.
I mean, they portray
say in the movie that he's been gone for 20 years.
But that's like, has he been in the jail? All that means is
he hasn't
been
Zorro. Like, or, yeah, who knows what he's been up to?
He's been on the lam or what? And yeah. I mean, I guess.
I'm cool with that, though. I don't need that explanation.
Yeah, I was just thinking about it where I don't need an explanation, but I guess it could be like that. Since Spanish guy came, he was like almost like he lost faith, and then he was like, you know, gave him a reason to live again, you know?
I feel like all we need to know is that, like, when we're checking in 20 years later, Zorro's at the point now where he's like, he's totally given up and he's like basically surrendered his like existence to being over.
Yeah. Yeah. He lost his wife and daughter and functionally the Zorro identity as well. So
whatever's
like,
happened in the meantime, like that's where he's at.
I'll just rot in jail.
Yeah.
He looks like feeble. Like when we see him,
it's great.
He's like,
it's a really cool transformation. Kind of like when you finally seen him all cleaned up.
To Ryan's point, he does break out of prison quite easily. So it's like,
he's planning this.
He's Zorro. Did he just have this in mind?
I know. It just kind of snapped into him again. You know. I guess I can buy that.
Yes.
I would. Well, it's interesting. But like
you mentioned, he snaps a guy's neck. Like, and it's not like he does the thing where he cuts the two hands around the guy and he like spins the head around. He just like, it looks like he's just choking him for a moment, but then you hear a kind of sound. I'm just like, did he like pinch the guy's Adam's apple or something? I was like, Jesus Christ.
This whole time.
You were right, Jackie. He literally has Zorro powers.
He has Zorro powers. The power of Zorro.
It's the mask. There was another, you're talking about,
like Zorro mask specifically.
Yeah, right. Remember, like there was like the governor, and is it Antoya or what was his name? The
Montero.
Montero has like that big party where Antonio all cleaned up shows up with
great
old
scene.
Zorro, and they have
real sexy.
That's where like the dance happens, and there's that thing where Hopkins tells him that when they go. When all the rich guys get up to go another room, you go with them. You have to go with them. And I was just thinking about that, like, just like, do you, if you ever were to like a big party like that, do you think like all the powerful rich men, they'll all get together like that? And, you know, there's like a secret meeting at all these, like any kind of rich party like that?
Yes. Yeah, like all the time.
Yeah.
They're constantly
like the party is an excuse to have this meeting, basically.
They're going to sell, like some essential part of human life for a profit.
Yeah, I was just thinking of that for some reason. Just those secret asshole meetings of just rich guys all in a room sucking each other's dicks.
At that point,
it's going on in Bartertown right now.
It is. When they get to that scene, yeah, with all the rich people at the party and the evil governor is revealing his plan of like, and that's how we'll buy it with the gold and blah blah blah, and then one of the like
so good,
well, one of the dons is like, yesterday you said the opposite to all those peasants. Oh, I was playing to the crowd. How do we know we're not playing to the crowd right now? And it was like, well, he did come up with that whole big tapestry behind you, so like, and also he's a rich guy. Like, come on, you know he's on your.
That
side.
Was straight up Bond villain. That giant round table and the giant tapestry.
It was like you had to employ so many craftsmen to get every single thing in this room for your evil plan.
And it was major like a Spider-Man with like Peter Parker interacting with the Osborn like vibes. Where it's like, I know who you are, and like you know who I am.
And they cut to him sitting there just like scowling of like, I can't believe they're doing this kind of evil stuff. And it's like, you look so suspicious.
Yeah. Yeah, you're just like totally like in that Bond room, everyone's all like salivating like, yeah, the pores, and he's over there like, I don't know.
Oh jeez.
That's one of my favorite tropes is the bad guy like, here's my plan scene.
Yes,
like, I love those scenes in movies.
I love to in a movie like this when you have I think what you have to have is the good guy has to be super, super good, and the villain has to be super, super bad. Like, Dragon Ball Z, like Goku versus Frieza. Like,
you know who the bad guy is.
Yeah, like if you want to, it makes the sword play, you know, it tees up a fun environment you're going to have with all the kind of like craft they put around it.
And I think this movie, I love the stakes that this movie has. Like, literally, like, hundreds of people are going to explode or get exploded. Like, the stakes in this movie, I think, it like you said, it is a long movie, but, like, there's enough in here. Like, I think the pacing is actually really good, considering how long the movie is. And it's interesting, there's, like, a huge chunk of this movie where we're just, it's all about getting a horse. Like, there's a sizable amount of this movie that's all about
he's
getting the horse.
Get
but
that
despite
horse.
That was the most, like, late 90s scene of the whole thing is that him getting on the horse and the horse going, like, out of control in the bar or the barracks and, like, kicking the shots of, like, the horse leg.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great first
despite
mission.
All of that, but despite all of that, I feel like this movie actually plugs along. And it's one of those instances where I don't usually go in for this, the idea that, oh, well, it's a long movie, so clearly it's an epic. But in this case, I kind of feel like that way. Like, sure, there's stuff you could probably trim, but I really feel like I am taken on a journey through this movie. And the length kind of has a bit to do with that. I don't necessarily feel the length, but by the end, I feel like I've been through, like, I fucking read War and Peace or something, and it was really rewarding. And like that was a really good fucking book, or in this case movie.
Dave, I like as someone who thought it was too long, I agree. Like I do think in a lot of ways it earns its length, and there's no plot points in particular that come to mind that I would cut. But one thing I do think that I would at least trim like 10 minutes off the movie is the third, like, not even third act, but just that last action scene. It's a great set piece. It's really cool. And there's a lot of good moments in it. But I feel like it goes on just a little too long for me, and like just beyond what my brain can process in like an unrelenting like action sequence. And I feel like I wish it was maybe 10 minutes from there. And it's like no problem for me with the length.
I was just gonna say, I wish there was a little bit more and Antonio Banderas' character in the beginning with a little bit. I think there could be another 10 minutes added to that moment, to that beginning.
And keep it the same length.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe the same length. And maybe I just think that there should, if there was just a tiny bit more of them, like him and his brother together in the UDW, like, feel that moment a little bit more him getting killed.
5 minutes more, like 3 minutes more with the brother, like just.
Yeah, you just need a little bit. It's just, it's too. Like, you don't even. The only thing he has is that great line where he's like, "Hey, how are you? I thought you guys were tied up or something like that." He's like, "That's because you're stupid." And that was a quote that stuck out with me.
Yeah,
I remember us saying that a lot.
That was like really fun.
And that's like his only thing. That's like his only little moment is that
was,
like, this because you're stupid.
It was like from like the very first, the opening scene. And I guess maybe the film ever explicitly says it. I wasn't sure if they were like birth brothers or just like some orphans who like came together and were like, yeah, we're brothers. Which again, like, I think it works either way, but like, yeah, just like one line with them as adults. Like I wouldn't even care really if it was, some real like, lamp shading kind of thing of like, that's true, brother of mine or something like that. But it's like, cause he calls him brother, you know, a million times after that, but it's like, by the time we see them for the first time as adults, it's like, wait, what is your relationship again? Like,
yeah, it just is one of those things where I'm just like, that was my only little.
I really
couldn't even gripe.
Like,
it's just like
two more lines.
I feel like there could have been one more little scene, like just in between those two, before the shit went down. Because it seemed like they kind of like do that like thing where they trick the guys doing the bounty to get money to give to these guys, whatever.
They do their
and then they're leaving.
Prank.
Yeah.
Which like
and
seems
then, like,
very practiced too, and I love that whole like routine they have.
Oh, I love a good. That's another trope, Dave. You've been hitting those really well. But like, let's see our band do a job that we know they've done a million times before. You know, kind
of
thing.
They come out of it, yeah. They're like, "Yep, worked again."
Yeah, and they just then right away they get captured by our asshole, you know, pricking.
Yeah.
And if they were just like a little bit longer on that, on that wagon, you know, them talking before they get captured again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all. It's just like, turn around. Oh, shit. There's
well,
yeah.
You know, hey, maybe we can agree to cut some 10 minutes off the last action sequence and we can put those 10 minutes back into that.
I'm glad we came to
be 10. It might need to be 5. You know, it could probably be one thing. But well, that's I mean, my only thing is, like, I feel like you would get a little bit more out of him dying. Because with Antonio... He kind of, after that happens, he's gone again until, because we're back to
it is
Anthony
another
Hopkins.
Big gap after that, yeah.
Until he meets, finds him in the bar trying to trade the his cantina. Silver off for drinking money. So that's my only, like, really gripe about this movie. Other than that, like, I think it holds up, and other than the problematic issues with it, it's still pretty fun.
Well, if we're talking about cuts, can we all agree that the tango scene stays?
Stays.
Yeah. I mean, we're all... this is a horny movie, and it needs it.
I think...
The tango's staying in!
Even if you're going to cut the Catherine Zeta-Jones character, like, leave the tango scene in. That even makes it better.
It sounds like we're winding down on Mask of Zorro. You guys got any other thoughts on Mask of Zorro?
Let's see. Trying to think what else I had. I literally didn't take many notes other than just like a few things like afterwards, just that kind of stuck out with me because I was just kind of enthralled by it.
We've said it in a million ways already. I genuinely enjoy how earnest and played straight how much of this movie is, even like the first like 15 minutes of the old Zorro kind of backstory unfolding. Like every beat of it, I was just like, oh, we meet wife and child. Oh, someone's gonna die. Oh, someone's gonna be adopted by the rat. And it's just every single, I know it's gonna happen. And yeah. I am thrilled. It's like, they're just doing it. And it looks so fun.
There was no cynicism.
It truly was. And despite, you know, it doesn't hit every single mark, I think it was just so fun. It was, like I said, definition of popcorn where,
oh,
I want to keep eating it.
Yeah.
One thing we didn't mention was the music in this movie. I think like the James Horner, he's done some great scores. He did the score for Aliens, Star Trek 2, 3.
Oh, man.
Titanic.
He did The Rocketeer, which is one of my favorite scores. He's in Braveheart. He's done a ton of big movies, Avatar. But one thing.
Sweeping, like playing on the emotions kind of.
Yes. I feel like I mentioned the pacing in this movie before. Like, I feel like one of the things that really propels this movie for the 2 hours and 17 minutes is the music. Like, the music, it sucks you in from the very beginning. Like, you know, and you got, like, the sound of, like, hoofbeats on, like, help me out here. Cobblestone.
You got some coconuts on cobblestones.
Not cobblestone. You know what I'm trying to say? Like when you hear horses like walking in like a courtyard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes. You get that. But one thing that's interesting about James Horner, I don't know if you guys are aware, he's done a ton of scores, a ton of like well-known scores. But one thing that's funny about James Horner is he has like a handful of little riffs that he has used in many, many movies to the point where it's like, is this like a self-plagiarism? Because like he uses it like there are a handful of cues which I, Chad, as I'm talking, why don't you dump them in that are exactly the same in several movies. It's not like he tweaks them a bit. They are straight up the same musical riff done in many movies.
To help Chad cue these up, what movies are you talking about?
Well, for instance, like every time there are several instances in the movie, it's kind of like almost a theme for the Captain Harry Love guy, the crazy American. Mm-hmm. You hear like this little Chad, could you drop it? It's like every time like something like, oh, shit, something's about to go down. Cha-ching. You hear that same thing in Willow. I think the first time he ever had it in a movie was Willow.
Willow.
Willow
before
like a
this?
Villain theme.
Yeah, Willow's
it pops
like the
up
80s,
in Willow,
right?
It pops up in this, it pops up in Avatar, it pops up in Behind Enemy at the Gates. It's the World War II movie. It pops up in a lot of movies, and to the point where it's like,
goddamn, this is really good and it fits the movie.
He's got a quiver. Dude. He's got an arrow in his quiver and he's going to keep using it.
I think that's what it is. He's just like, you know what? It fits the scene. I'm going to use it even though I've already used it 7 times before.
He's like, hey, I know how to indicate like emotion or tone. And it is weird right here.
I feel like it's like a band like having like a hit single off of an album and then putting out their next album with like that single on the track list. Or something, or like, yeah, playing the same riff or something.
It's like I get it when composers do that. When like Star Wars, for instance, obviously John Williams is going to bring back themes that he's had in the previous movies. It's within the franchise. Yeah. It's within the franchise.
He's not bringing Indiana to Star Wars.
A theme is different from like, oh, I remember when I did that, like, you know, quick little thing. I'm going to do that again.
How fucking jarring would it be if we had like Close Encounters music during like Force Awakens, like
Saving Private Ryan.
That'd be insane.
It's the same thing here. He uses music from Willow in Enemy at the Gates, which is a World War II sniper movie. The music fits, but it's like, come on,
James.
Yeah.
you're not his friend.
That's nuts.
But having said that, it's good fucking music. I can't deny.
It's great. I love the music in this movie. I think it's like perfect.
Yeah.
I agree. And I think it really does a good job of like propelling the movie forward and having a good pace for what would otherwise be a really long movie.
Yeah. The only other movie really that probably comes close to this in the modern era was probably like the first Pirates movie, right? The Pirates of the Caribbean.
I was thinking about that a lot, like watching this, like, I should rewatch Pirates of the Caribbean,
That's the first thing.
Like,
I haven't seen it too recently, but the first one, like, I mean, but more than obviously the others, but when it was already just like too bloated to move, but like the first one was not at all a sure thing. So it actually like tried some stuff and was like genuinely, like that. It has a big sweeping score and swashbuckling, which is what you want from it.
Yeah. We were saying like this is the last movie like that, because I mean, sure, this movie has a little bit of CGI in it, but like it's subtle. And this one, that like the Pirates movie is definitely loaded with it, but like at least it feels like this type of movie for sure.
I think you see like where this went in the more modern era is your Mad Max Fury Roads, you know, or your John Wicks, maybe even.
I was going to say, Fury Road is maybe a little too classy.
I think Fury Road is definitely a classier movie than this. But I think that, like, there's a lot of, like, looking back and, like, because CG was so dominant for so long, like, more so than it was even in the late 2010s, I feel like. For a while, CG was, like, it was it. And I think there was a little bit of like looking back at like, oh, appreciating what we had with practical effects and realizing what they brought to the table that CG didn't. And so I think Fury Road would have, I can imagine that team being inspired by, hey, look at, for example, some of the things they were able to do on Zorro, Mask of Zorro, and you know, the expanding the crowd work maybe. Or, you know, the edges of the scene rather than anything major going on. You know?
Yeah. I think the John Wick example is probably a little better to what you're saying of like, because the John Wick, you know, series itself leans, I feel like, in a good way into the silliness of a world like Zorro, where the John
everyone's
Wick stuff
a train,
is like,
it's Bugs Bunny
assassin
cartoon like this.
We've
a little
got
bit.
Our silly pirate definitely. Coin currency.
It's a like, silly fun world that we all know is like bullshit.
It's a big silly world, and we have a code of honor, and that's you know what's happening.
The way that movie's made, it was like stunt people. Like
exactly,
it's all just like look at the craft of the fights.
And I think also kind of with John Wick being in some ways like a successor to that kind of style of like a big fun action romp. The kind of like color scheme in Zorro is again very like I feel like earnestly played straight, like a lot of primary colors of like you, the tango scene is Antonio Banderas in blue, Catherine Zeta-Jones in red, and then like the evil American shows up in yellow, like around it, and it's very just like simple stuff, easy to follow. John Wick is like a little more kind of desaturated, like a little more removed, and a little more leaning into the like, you know, later 2000s more neon side of it, but it's still very like, here's some like, you know, here's the choreography, here's like some colors, like let's just do it. And it's I like that. I don't need it to be paint by numbers for me, the dummy viewer, but like it's you know, it's satisfying when you get it like that sometimes when you do it well, and it's
it's, man, like eating like Zorro. A really good cheeseburger.
Exactly. You're like, I know what I want, and you did it.
Yeah. It's one of those. I feel like it's I feel like a kid would get it, like a younger person could still really get into this movie a lot. And yeah. Just like
take it's got flips.
It's got flips.
It's those kids. I swear that having those kids in the beginning of the movie is like the magic trick of it. Because any kid is gonna watch it and be put in their shoes, you know?
Yeah.
That's the magic trick of this movie. Yeah. The secret ingredient. If it didn't have that, it'd be like just kind of that for some reason that those kids in the beginning of the movie just set it off.
Yeah, without it, it would be much more like, why should I care about Zorro?
Yeah. Like, you don't have to even have any background of Zorro. It's kind of like why Force Awakens works as an entry point, but they fucked it up at the end of it. But at the end of the first story, but
it could have worked. Talk about Zorro!
It could have worked. It could have worked as an entry point like this movie.
Zorro was like Star Wars.
I'm so sorry. I invited Cody back to show us Rise of Skywalker from that alternate dimension. We should have just lived.
Rain, have you fallen off the Star Wars wagon again? I thought you would let it go. Did you watch Rise of Skywalker again?
He hasn't stopped watching Rise of Skywalker.
It's been playing in my head.
Rain, is your heart it
just
okay?
Every day there's a new thing. So this came from the outer dimension situation, like from our outer dimension internet. But apparently, during the a screening of the movie, JJ was showing it to friends, and Spielberg at the end of the movie, after watching it, goes, "Hey, what happened to Babu? What happened to Babu Frick?" Originally, Babu wasn't in the cockpit with Zori Bliss at the end. They added that in later because they just blew him up on the planet.
Spielberg was like, "Hey, what's up?"
I'm gonna tell you Spielberg something right now Babu. That I feel like maybe speaks to me, but I probably speaks to the movie. I don't remember who Zori Bliss is.
That was Felicity's character.
I remember Felicity Jones. I remember that. I know who that was. I didn't know her name was Zori. What? Bliss?
It's interesting. You know Zori what, Ryan? Bliss? I'm glad you said that because I have a way to bring it back around to Zorro. It's interesting you mentioned Spielberg because a similar thing happened with this movie. Martin Campbell was having trouble ending the movie. He didn't. There was like a button that he wanted to put on the movie, but he didn't necessarily have it. It's like, all right, well, we got Hopkins dying in Zorro and Banderas' arms, and you got that really cool shot of them walking out of the smoke, and all the people are following him behind, and he's got the kid in his arm. How are we going to end this movie?
When they have the three hands. Idea, that was, sorry, I hate to interrupt, but just when they had the three hands all together, that was like really beautiful, I thought. That was a great moment in the movie. I do want to mention that. They like earned it. It was really cool.
They did. But Campbell, nevertheless, wanted like a button to the movie. He wanted like a cool last shot to go out on. And it was Spielberg who he went to, where Spielberg's like, oh, why don't you just kind of bookend it with the thing like he did in the beginning, where like he's telling the story to his kid. And then it was a Spielberg idea, the shot of like the door closing like on its own and sort of like they're kind of closing the story on Zorro for now.
Yeah.
That was Spielberg.
That was rad. That was like, I loved it.
Until next time, wink.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like the end of like The Searchers or something where it's like the same shot where like he's walking out the door and the door just sort of closes on its own and then the movie ends.
For me
it's
too, again,
nice
it's
neat fairy tale kind of just like, and there we go. We can pick it up if we want, but
yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think it, like, again, is one of the things that helps tease up the whole theaterness of it, like, the theatricalness of it.
Yes.
And, like,
yes.
Yeah, maybe there were some, you were fucking looking at the popsicles and toothpicks holding this movie together at parts, but, like, that's because it was just a story being told. Like, it is a story. It's, like, a legend, and you're not Hopefully fucking the frame. Am I using this right?
You're not penetrating the frame? What?
I'm not using it right. Damn it. You're not trying to pay attention to like those, like who cares if spirit glue was on the beard, you know, like this was a story I was telling this baby.
Yeah.
Hey, you know what? The baby didn't nitpick it.
Yeah.
So maybe you
the baby liked the story.
The baby thought it was just fun, and that's what I was going for. So.
And then in the sequel, they probably bring back that kid, I'm guessing, and that's the new. Is that how it goes?
And that's the the touch of death for the Legend of Zorro. They brought a kid in, and
no!
The kid talks.
Oh, there we go.
That was what was wrong with The Mummy Returns too.
Yes.
Damn it.
No one fucking cares about their kid. Don't
everyone thought every studio exec was like, no, but this kid, this is going to be the kid.
This will be the one that audiences find charming.
All that's, we do is if we get one kid to stick, then that kid's going to grow up and he's going to be an adult. We can keep milking that kid. Like
that's exactly what they do in Legend of Zorro. His kid becomes Zorro. I mean, obviously it's the grown up version of his kid, but nevertheless, like if the whole idea is the Legend of Zorro, the legend goes on and it lives on.
They should have had Antonio Banderas with his own Dark Knight like moment where he's fighting another villain that's cooler than the last villain.
Well, no, he did. That was what happened in Legend of Zorro. That was Antonio Banderas' last ride, and then the movie ends with a grown up version of his kid as Zorro, like the legend lives on. But again, the problem is the majority of that movie has 8-year-old kid running around and it's horrible, whereas this movie has the kids in the beginning and it's just you get that great
nice
crowd
meet.
Scene when
they're not the main characters.
Yeah, no, I'm saying that like that movie shouldn't have it at all. Like that movie should just be Antonio Banderas. Like
it, the thing is it was like 10 years later, whatever, 7 years later,
and it was too long. Yeah, too much time had gone by.
I mean, if the Catherine Zeta-Jones character was shallowly written in the first one, then like God, I can't imagine how shallow she was in the sequel of like, and now she's a mother, but she's so spunky sometimes, only when we need her, though. Like, God.
That is basically it, yeah.
It immediately.
We'll have one scene where she's
color
like,
me shocked.
But I'm a strong girl.
But I can still hold a sword. But mostly I care about my son and my husband.
I'm defined by my care for my child.
I would do anything
let that
for
be a lesson
son.
To you, Hollywood. I mean, I know you've been dead for a long time, but let that be a lesson to you. Kids are a death nail for your movie.
I keep on thinking about the it was a BoJack Horseman quote from Princess Caroline that was like, "I got your text. You found the next Haley Joel Osment. Oh, it was just an excuse to get me here. Damn it, it's never the next Haley Joel Osment."
There never will be another Haley Joel.
There'll never be another
Haley
Joel.
Oh no, we got
Haley
Jacob Tremblay. Jacob Tremblay. He's the next one.
Who is?
Jacob Tremblay.
No.
It's
already over.
That kid is a box office. He is.
I'm sorry,
Book all of his movies he's been in have made like billions of dollars. Like he's like.
Ryan, case in point, The Predator.
That's true.
Oh, man.
That's true.
Damn.
I'm sorry, the Tremblay streak might have been broken.
Well, when you start talking about Jacob Tremblay, I think it's safe to say your Zorro podcast has come to an end. I'd like to thank Jackie for stopping by and doing an episode with us. I know you're technically with us at all times as you roam through our air vents in a quasi-feral state, but we always appreciate it when you drop in and talk about movies.
I've been known to have that effect.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Apocalypse Video. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts out in the wasteland. You can leave us a comment on Instagram or Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts on The Mask of Zorro? What's your stance on frame fucking? Is there too much of it or not enough? Let us know.
I'm sorry I brought it up.
No way, Ryan. I think you just inadvertently revealed what Dave does when he watches cat people.
I'm going to plead the fifth on that one. Either way, drop us a line on Instagram, Facebook, or an email. You can email us at apocalypsevideopod@gmail.com. Once again, that's apocalypsevideopod@gmail.com. But that'll do it for this episode. I'm your host, David Snyder, and I'll leave you all with the words of the immortal Zorro. Live vigorously.